Welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast. In our podcast today, I speak to the sisters who create modern and timeless jewellery at the helm of Otienburg, Christy and Rosanna. In our conversation today, we talk about the importance of responsible and seasonless jewellery and how their backgrounds in fashion and art and their quest to find quality, affordable fine jewellery helps them to create one of the fastest growing brands in the business. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brown Thomas Podcast. So, Rosanna and Christy, thank you so much for joining me on the Brown Thomas Podcast.
Our absolute pleasure.
I think it's the first time we've had sisters or siblings on the podcast. I think it is.
Maybe. It's also one of our first times as well. So it's exciting to do this.
And I'm thinking maybe that's because I'm basing this on my own personal life. I could not work with a sibling. it certainly wouldn't have the successful outcome of Otienburg. So well done.
It's our secret power, actually. We've managed to sort of create a really good working relationship. So
I think it definitely, we had an article written about us recently, and then someone actually started doing a poll saying, could you work with your sister? Because you know what? It was a 50-50 split.
I know. I'd probably do a disservice to my lovely brothers. They probably couldn't work with me. But I hope you take this in the best possible way. But it is it's on its way to like the highest level of popularity. Why wouldn't you take that the best way? But I feel like it's so popular. And it's just all of a sudden, I feel I see Otienburg jewellery very often. Tell us about your business and more so the ethos of Otienburg.
Well, we started it 6 years ago. Neither of us come from a jewellery background, which I think actually is the reason why we're still here today and doing well. I think we were living together in London. It was at that stage of our lives. We had loads of ear pierces. We were wearing earrings and we just couldn't find jewellery that kind of really spoke to us. We had a little bit of disposable income, not a huge amount. I had lived in the Middle East previously with a prior job and kind of created and made these beautiful tiny diamond huggies before that was like a real trend. Like huggies weren't really a thing 7 years ago. And I had like seven ear pierces and all these up my lobes. And all of my friends started asking where they're from. And I suddenly was like, oh, there's a real desire for people to wear these. Mm-hmm. And it literally came, Rosanna and I were living together in London in a flat. Mm. And we kind of came up with the idea of what, there is no jewellery brand that speaks to us truly.
And we couldn't afford fine jewellery. No. So we sort of, I think the kind of blessing of coming from outside the industry is we found sort of this 9-carat solid gold. We found this vermeil. So these beautiful materials, long lasting, which we could sort of afford, but also create pieces that we felt really comfortable with. And that's kind of our ethos. It's about creating these pieces that become your second skin. So whether that's kind of the beautiful materials we work with, which is kind of recycled sterling silver, recycled solid 9-carat gold, which are all accessible. You know, we want people, we have customers who are, you know, late teens up until their kind of 60s, 70s. And it's really wonderful.
So
I think, you know, it was a very intuitive beginnings. Mm-hmm. We never expected it to get to where it is today. And I think we very much listened to kind of gut instinct along the way. And being sisters, I think, has just allowed us to grow the business together, like really aligned without having to always sort of check in. You know, it's like we're both Londoners born and bred. We had a lot of shared cultural experiences, you know, whilst also having our differences. And it's allowed us to almost not even have to speak sometimes, but just to be able to intuitively guide it together. So I think
beautiful.
I also think what we've managed to do is we've never had investment, which is actually quite a big thing. So we design pieces that we love. We don't follow trends. As Rosanna said, they become your second skin. And, you know, we have the same pieces that are still bestsellers that we launched 4 years ago. And I think that's really important to say because we don't really follow fashion trends as such. We very much wear our pieces and we're like, right, would we wear this in 5-10 years time? And if we do and we still love it, we sell it. And if we don't, we don't sell it. So the whole collection is truly an extension of who we are.
Mm. And it's really nice that that worked.
Yeah. I think we're kind of overwhelmed with trends sometimes, you know, I mean, plus we invest in jewellery. It shouldn't be season driven, I don't think. And I think that, you know, I'm kind of seeing a worrying trend that you know, particular publications saying things like, here's what's out this season, here's what you need to buy instead. And I think we have to stop with the consumption and just buy fewer things and really appreciate what we have.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you say that because at the beginning, we definitely faced obstacles with the industry in terms of, like, you know, saying to buyers that we're not going to have like loads of newness every season, you know, and that ultimately some of the pieces that if they're selling well, they should just buy into it. And now that's a kind of accepted like behavior, which is wonderful. And you know, I think it even goes down to sort of when we first started, we didn't have huge budgets, so we would only produce in like minimal quantities in order to sort of test demand, see how they were doing. So I think in terms, it's kind of just more of a responsible way of creating. And I think it's more of a contemporary approach, like a kind of, we always talk about consciousness, about like knowing where everything is made, knowing your impact, and you know, that feeds into what we can talk about later in terms of production. But yeah, so I think trends have just never even been a thing for us.
No, I think we have different backgrounds of experience, but I did 10 years in luxury fashion, working at Louis Vuitton for 4 years, and they never go on sale. Their pieces are forever. And I kind of, I had that experience, and I guess we were just like, why would you put jewelry on sale in 6 months' time? It's such an, you know, to buy a piece of jewelry, there has to be an emotional connect to it, and that emotional connect's not going to go in 6 months' time. If they're forever pieces, and that's very much how we design. It's it really is truly forever pieces in that, in the design sense.
So let's talk about now you're working in this beautiful harmony together, but there was this individual experience professionally, but it has created a very strong combination when it came to setting up this brand. And you touched on it briefly there, Christy, with your background in Louis Vuitton. But could you both tell me about, you know, the strength you brought to the business from the outset?
So I'll speak. So there's actually 4 years difference, which I think is a really nice age gap as well in terms of kind of life stages, and you know, we're speaking very much to our peers as customers, and it's just lovely to be able to kind of have that different viewpoint as well. But I come from the art industry and branding industry. So I spent my 20s actually, after, as soon as we set up Ottenberg, I actually moved to New York. So that was a bit of a spanner in the works for us. And we were always doing something. Yeah, I know, as a side hustle. What I've realized is life just tends to throw things at you, which you don't expect. So I was out there representing art galleries and institutions, and then moved into luxury branding. So that gave me such a valuable insight into, you know, not only the art world and being influenced, you know, by that, but also just how to create a brand, how to, you know, what is it that appeals, and how can we like visually represent. So all of these things, I think, without knowing it, really helped inform Ottenberg today. And obviously it's a skill set that I think Christy didn't come to the table with, then obviously she came to the table with luxury fashion.
Yeah, so I started working luxury fashion at like 21, so I kind of finished uni and went straight to Burberry. So I've done all sorts. I kind of done from PR, from buying. I then moved to the Middle East and worked for Louis Vuitton for 4.5 years, which was incredible. Traveled the world really and saw and met incredible people in different cultures. And it gave me, I think it was 10 years in the industry or 12 years, and it just gave me incredible insight, again, in a different way to Rosanna, about how to build a brand with longevity and with meaning and with beauty, and kind of to understand that kind of customer. And what's so lovely now is that, you know, we have luxury customers who buy design labels, but will also buy £180 pair of hoops from us to work alongside the row or whatever it is they're wearing. And I think that's so lovely because there's the understanding that we work really well with these like tailored pieces. So that's really where the whole design ethos came from, is to feel and use the materials that are luxurious, but make sure that the price point doesn't rule out certain people, and to be really inclusive in that respect, but to always have beautiful, stunning pieces that are shot really well. And hopefully our websites, you know, to create a real Ottenberg world and a luxury brand that's affordable.
Yeah, I think we're very excited by that. You know, we get excited about the little things that other people might find boring, you know, website navigations through to packaging, you know, that's the kind of thing that really gets us going. So in a weird way, we were living these lives that ultimately built these kind of really complementary skill sets to now, which is really nice.
It's amazing. And you mentioned it was, you know, to a degree a side hustle from the outset. At what point, what was the jumping off point then to say, well, okay, this is it now? I mean, because that, you have to be apprehensive about that, no matter how successful the business is. It is a move, isn't it?
It can be scary. We actually have an interesting story about that. I think the day that, so I decided to move back from New York to do it full time, which was a huge life decision. I sort of very much made a life for myself out there. And the day that I was moving back, our jewelry got stolen.
Oh,
yes. So
your home, or
yeah. So this was just like I basically have. It's also important to say that I've had three children in 6 years, which is the length of the business as well. So we didn't have an office at the beginning. It was a total hustle. I was working Burberry and then doing Ottenburg for 2 days. Then I was pregnant, and we launched the collection about 3 weeks after I gave birth to my first child. And so we were stock counting, myself and a friend, in our flat in London, and it was a basement flat, and obviously someone had seen that we were stock counting. The next morning I wake up to feed my son about 6:30 in the morning, and the basement doors were open, and we'd had all our collection stolen. Not to mention the fact that people jumped in. Mm-hmm. It was quite terrifying. So we had a lot of kind of
that was the first terrifying obstacle of going full time Ottenburg. Yeah. But do you know what, I think if you run a brand like kind of we have, and I think it's all about these failures and these learnings, because from that we then, you know, we're like, right, how do we get a studio, how do we protect our stock, are we insured properly? So I think ultimately it was a huge kind of, you know, upset. Yeah. But it's led to us getting far more sort of professional.
So those mishaps, well, that was more than a mishap, that was really unfortunate, but I mean, they do strengthen you, right? You got to pull up your socks and keep going with something like that. So what's the team like now? So how have you expanded?
So we're female, we are a full female team. I have to say, we have some really kick-ass women in our team. We are 7 in total, including us. And it's funny because I think people think we're a lot bigger than we are, but I think our ethos is always to grow kind of responsibly and slowly, which has meant that we've had to do the same for the team. So we have a team of 5 other women that help us. And they're all based in our London HQ, where we also have our boutique by appointment. So our customers can come and see us for an appointment, and it's really nice. You always want the brand to feel like a family. So these appointments, you have a dedicated sales staff. She's wonderful, and she will kind of help you with styling, gifting, etc. And that's right next door to our studio, so it's all very seamless and sort of open door policy.
I think it's also nice. So we, as we've evolved as people, obviously I've had a family and we've all got a bit older. Mm. You know, so has the collection, and that's why, you know, personalization. You know, Brown Thomas, they also sell personalized pieces from us. It's been huge. And I think once I had my first kid, which was a boy, I wanted something personal, very kind of small, nothing too huge or chunky or fashion. You know, as we've grown, so has the collection. We've built out our kind of solid gold collection more. We're offering more beautiful diamond bands, kind of your everyday wear, much more into bridal. So it's lovely. It really is an extension. It's kind of as we've grown and our community and our friends.
Yeah.
We all sort of sit around at one table, and it's kind of very, you know, unhierarchical and lovely. So
that's lovely. And you have the personalization, but also for the disorganized husband like mine, you also have the initials, so they can just run in and grab something. And it also feels quite meaningful, you know. So we're catering to all. Talk to me about the materials then, because it started as, you know, finely designed jewelry, but at a reasonable price point. So I'm imagining there wasn't as much solid gold or precious stones as the collection has evolved to contain now. So tell me about the overview of the materials that you're using, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. It's really interesting to us because the split of the collection is actually 50% solid gold and 50% either sterling silver or kind of plated, which we call gold vermé, which is a beautiful material. Basically, it indicates that it is a certain thickness of plate and it's a sterling silver base versus other sort of ones on the market. And we love that because I think, you know, our customers will potentially want to buy a chunkier piece, which in solid would be inaccessible to them, and pair it with a smaller solid gold piece. So we're really seeing like our customers mix and match across the two, which is lovely, which is what we've always done. In terms of the materials, so again, I think we mentioned it earlier, coming to the industry, you know, it's quite a closed industry. I think we sort of had to figure a lot of stuff out ourselves. And I think we found this 9-carat material and we just fell in love with it. It's beautiful dusty gold, it's so long lasting, and it's just, in terms of kind of costing, it's not as much as your 14, your 18, but honestly the longevity is just as good in our experience. So I think again it was really intuitive. It's obviously recycled metals, and that goes as a given. And you know, every year we sort of look at what our materials, the impact is, and we actually do what's called a life cycle assessment, which is just a proper deep dive into how our materials impact which is always really interesting to see. And in terms of gemstones, we always try and keep gemstones under 50% of the collection, but they're beautiful, and we've got some really stunning moonstone coming out this year, for example. But we sort of tend to keep to a monochrome palette, so yeah, that's kind of your whites, your blacks, your sort of neutrally kind of smoky quartz we're slightly obsessed with at the moment. But yeah, so that's really the materials.
You know, and again, that comes back to responsibility and something probably that we don't consider, you know, that things can live on and be restored and repaired. Mm-hmm. And it's a word that you guys have used, you know, Christy, I know that you would rather the term responsible as opposed to sustainable. Am I right?
Yes, I think we're always, it's something we've always done. It's been a key pillar of ours since the beginning. We just haven't kind of communicated on it because it should be, it's such a core value that should be done regardless. In terms of being responsible, it's just about being considered. We are making pieces. So I think, you know, we're fortunate in the sense that what we try and do is when we launch a product, we can test it. So we have negotiated with our workshop, we've had an incredible long-standing relationship with, and we, you know, produce a kind of a limited amount of units, and we see how well that piece will do. And if we sell through, we can put it on pre-order, and the customer's happy to wait again. But I think that's a really important thing to say, rather than just hugely over-ordering or anticipating that it's going to do incredibly well, and, you know, for some reason it doesn't or something. But I think we're just steady, and it's gradual, and that's how the whole business has worked, really.
I guess that's why you probably see a pre-order over a sale on Ottenberg. If you were, we don't really go on sale to that point. I think for us the word sustainable is a bit of a red flag. I think if you're producing products, it's one of my pet peeves as well, because I think it's overly used in an industry that ultimately relies on newness. I think
100%, yeah.
We do not deny that we produce product that, you know, it's not integral to daily life on Earth. But what we'd say is that we really are aware of this. And I think we want to try and do things as responsibly as possible. So that's why, you know, we're kind of taking steps towards B Corp and all of that. I think we just want to talk about the elephant in the room in terms of fashion and just be honest and just show our journey. And
in some ways, sustainability now is used as a method to sell even more, you know, and I think that it needs to be shrouded in a little more honesty, because, you know, naturally the business, the industries are built on, you know, consumption. So it's hard to do both, isn't it?
It's really a 360 consideration, you know, to the point of our designs. That's why we don't go on sale. That's why we design an effortless, you know, simple piece that's actually really considered, because we've worked out, are you going to like that piece for an incredibly long time? So, you know, it's such a 360 approach, being responsible.
So tell me then, you know, life has changed, families have grown. It seems quite idyllic to be working with your sister, to be doing something you enjoy and love so much. So no Sunday blues, as you say.
No Sunday blues. We were just saying, well, before we started recording, that it's so nice not to have that feeling in the bottom of your stomach. We've all been there. It's really nice. There's like a trust between us that I think is, you know, you only get with family. One day one of us might not be feeling quite right, and you know, the other one will instantly know, and so that's really nice.
I think it's also really amazing that this brand is truly us. It really is who we are as people. There's not one piece in the collection that we don't like ourselves, that we don't wear. You know, we're head to toe every single day. We test them. I wear them for months, and I know when I love something because I haven't taken it off and feel a bit naked without it. And you know, it's a really content kind of working experience, because it truly is our kind of personality and self-expression. And it's lovely putting something out there that you feel is truly, you know, you're being truly yourself. And it's lovely that there's been such a positive response around it. Because it really is a family business in that sense, and kind of our style, our aesthetic and our beliefs.
It's satisfying.
It's really satisfying.
For sure,
And it sounds like, you know, the community that is around you also dictate what comes out of this beautiful brand. You probably have people like piercing themselves a lot more just to wear more.
I had a lot of friends get more piercings.
Great.
I think the personalization, as I said, it's just been so huge for us. And again, that was such an organic kind of launch, and we started with the name bracelets, and now we do date pendants, we do our little initials that you have. And I think, you know, that's because my friends started to grow up, have their kids. You know, some people get their dogs, it doesn't have to be children, but it's very much, you know, you're wearing something that is so dear to you. And yeah, our community always wants something that's quite subtle, so it doesn't override you as a person, but you would feel weird if you weren't wearing it. So yeah, we're I'm creative director, and I'm constantly influenced by my friends. And that's why I think I could probably never leave London in terms of where I live. I'm just constantly inspired by people I see on the streets.
They're your inspiration, and then your creative process from that. How does that work for you, Christy?
Honestly, it's I'm always kind of trying to strip away. So it's very much, because we're constantly working with seasonless pieces, we're always trying to like really study chains, for example, and always trying to find the most unique chain out there, and then look at a closure which can also become a pendant. So we have a lot of our chains in the collection which are bestsellers, which have a front closure, which we've been doing for absolutely years. It's kind of the joy of celebrating a closure instead of creating a pendant.
It's simplicity, and it's just
really exploring what you can celebrate that's not too over designed. And that's what I find quite joyous, actually, is stripping things away and working on form and structure. And when it comes to stones, we work in monochromes, so it's maybe taking out quite a lot of the colors and working in black and pearl and white. So yeah, it's really kind of I think the whole collection feels quite effortless. You know, we do have some slightly, you know, we have quite a signature earring look, which is quite a squared long hoop, which has been so successful for us. So it's working with those signature pieces, but again, always working with quite natural forms, nothing over the top, really.
It's beautiful. And I just actually, from talking to you now, I want to get back into Brent Thomas and have a good nose. I mean, you know, it's lovely to speak to you, because if I didn't already garner it from, you know, having some of your collection and you know, moseying as I go through Brent Thomas on the daily basis, there's meaning in what you do, and there's absolute integrity in your business. And I think that's really refreshing and really important. It's inspiring, you know, it's inspiring to see a business start organically like it did and grow to this level of global domination. So I mean, it was just lovely to speak to you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been brilliant. So great to chat. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brent Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brent Thomas on Instagram for more updates.